All right, welcome back for another episode of Tattoos and Jesus. I don't know about you, Josh, but I'm actually super pumped today. We've got an episode that I am looking forward to. We're going to be diving into just the fascination with true crime, murder, psychopaths, sociopaths, kind of hitting it from a cultural perspective, but then tying in that psychological side from, just from our training and what we understand, in addition to the coffee review that we always hit on here on the show. So, man, how has your week been going for you?
And we're doing good. We're doing good. We're making it. Really pumped about this week's episode, the one we're doing right now, because I love a good debate, and then I love anything to do with horror movies. I like the psychological aspect of it. Kind of gonna just really hone in on the counseling part of our podcast and dive into all that. So that's exciting.
I'm
To
glad you're
flex on that,
excited.
you know?
I'm fascinated by how people work, like the brain function and how, we adapt as a society to situations. What I am not thrilled by is horror movies. So I'm glad that you like them, but I am terrified by them. As you can probably hear, my voice is hit or miss today. I strained my vocal cords, have allergies, and I'm battling a slight cold. And so I like to think that I sound like a sexy Barry White. That's what I like to think I sound like.
We'll let you we'll allow you to continue to think that.
So
We
you're
will allow
disagreeing.
that.
You're not agreeing with me?
I'm not going to say that I agree with you 100%. We'll let the listeners decide, and they can email me in what you sound like, and
Listen, tell me.
we'll take a poll.
Hold on, hold on. Close your eyes. Close your eyes. Let's get it on.
The first part, I will say, when you said "let's get," it was almost there, and then the rest of it just kind of faded off into like this, like Ohio type of
Oh
accent.
my. What, I sound like I have Buckeyes in my mouth?
Yep, go Buckeyes.
Listen, don't get me started on that garbage. Growing up, I was born in Ohio, spent 7 years in Pennsylvania, then we moved down to North Carolina. And it drove me nuts. And really, this is vicarious trauma. Because my dad is really the one that had to experience this, but then he would talk about it at home, so it became my trauma. But we're in Ohio. Ohio is the Midwest. If anything, it's kind of accent free. It's kind of a neutral place. From what I understand, is they will actually target like news journalists from the Midwest because the way they speak is universal. It doesn't have a strong pull in any direction. There's like some cultural words connected maybe to the Midwest, but not necessarily a strong accent. All right. So all that being said, grew up in Ohio, move up to
Convenient.
Pittsburgh, right? My dad immediately becomes a Southerner, like a dang Southerner, like Ohio to Pittsburgh. The states touch each other. And also becomes a Southerner, moves to North Carolina. So where are you from? From Ohio. Oh, you a dang Yankee. And so in my life, I've been all of those things. I've been a Southerner, I've been a Northerner. Truthfully, I'm just a Midwesterner, I guess, by genetic birth. Probably Southern by influence.
Well, I mean, I guess it's better than, have you ever been labeled like a sociopath or a psychopath?
Occasionally. I have a
Okay,
middle.
well, never mind. That didn't help your
I
case.
bet you if you polled my middle schooler right now, he would say that I qualified as one or the other.
Well, I mean, you know,
Hence my strained vocal cords.
right. Yeah.
Shoot, man. Are we ready for a coffee review?
We are ready for the ba-ba-ba dirty brew review. I think is what
Yes,
you meant to say.
you used it first. I'm proud of you.
Look, I'm trying to get my Midwest on, you know, trying to get my Midwest vibes.
What dirty brew are we reviewing? Because this was actually one that you really liked. You were excited for this review.
So it's called Cafe Bustelo,
Stello.
and
I'm
it's
not gonna
yellow.
look at a picture here.
You can't miss it in the grocery store. It's a yellow, either brick like not gold like the one we had before, but it's like a bright yellow brick,
It's a
or
small
they
brick
have an,
too. They sell it in 10 ounces, where a lot of coffee comes in 30 ounces. It's a 10-ounce brick.
and then some of them have just like the regular canisters or whatever, but
Yeah.
this is a go-to at the beach. Or it's slowly become one of my favorite espresso beans, grounded up and brewed through the pot, or if you have one of those little Keurig cups that you can pour coffee into, you can do it that way. So
So several people have mentioned this to me. So even though I had never heard of Cafe Bustelo before we were coming up with names to review, but having now come up with it, I've had a handful of people mention it. So I do think it's a low-key favorite in the community.
it is, yeah.
But
Good
this is what
price.
scares me. This is what scares me. It's an espresso.
Yes, which just makes it fabulous.
So I guess my question is, so I haven't tried mine yet. I brewed it, but I wanted an honest reaction. So I haven't tried it. I've never drank it before, but I didn't know if I brewed it. Like, do I brew it the same way? Is it same amount of grounds to water ratio to our standard old like Folgers medium roast?
It's up to you.
I mean, that's what I did. I just am scared to know if I did a good thing
It's
or not.
got a little, it's got a punch. It's
It's
going to be a
gonna
little bit
kick me.
stronger. It's going to be a little bit stronger. So you can take down the grounds a little bit, but I mean, it's good. It's
It's really
like,
fine. Like the grind, it's the grind. It's a
yeah,
really.
it's fine. It's fine. So maybe do for me, usually I do a little bit above half in a coffee pot. This one I would probably just do right at half,
Okay.
and a little sugar, a little milk.
I'm scared. Let's try it, man. I'm going.
I'm here for
Oh. It's got a strong kick. A little bit of a bitter feel to me, more than the others have, but I like it. I'm strangely attracted to it.
It's got that little punch in there, you know?
But I honestly, okay. So remember,
That's
was
good.
it last week we acknowledged that you were influenced in your rating of Seattle's coffee
Was, yes.
because you're at the beach.
Yes.
Like I feel a pressure here to rate this thing probably better than I should because I know you like it and I have friends that like it. So I feel compelled to like it.
Okay.
I mean, what do you think of it? What's it? How's it hit you?
I love it. So tasting it, it's just like it's got a good strong flavor. So like sometimes you can drink coffee and it's just like water, or it's just like
Yeah.
creamer. But this actually, for the price, actually has
Flavor.
good flavor to it, especially if
Okay.
you like bolder type, because it is espresso. So
That's true. I think I said that last week when I tried the Green Mountain Coffee. Like I liked it, but it's a really neutral. Like it doesn't have a flavor per se. Like it's just a good like just pushing it through. No, not really gonna have a reaction. This one actually. All right, so I learned something interesting. Back in November, one of our elders at church preached, and he used a metaphor of coffee. And I'm gonna be honest with you, I do not remember what the sermon was about, but I remember the metaphor because he talked about how what we read, like most people, if you drink black coffee, like if you've never acquired that taste, it hits you with like this bitter tone. And kind of what he was saying is like our body, like our tongue registers it as bitterness, but that's not actually what it is. Like the coffee is not bitter. That's just the way that we, I guess, I don't know, process the flavor. So I hit him up last week. We were talking about this in my small group because I thought he told us what the flavor was. Like I thought he like used a $10 word that was like unique to coffee. Come to find out he didn't. He doesn't know actually what it's called. But he said the reason is if you want a coffee that has a more bitter flavor, it's actually acid content.
So it's gonna be more at so if all you acid reflux people out there who
Right.
take Tums, make sure you take a couple before you start the
Yeah.
coffee route. This is like a 1 cup, 2 cup, but it's not something you're probably gonna drink all day.
No, that not I would not want more than one cup of this.
So it does the
So
job,
anyway,
tastes
he
good.
also said that like old beans, and he used something else. There's two ways that sometimes coffee artificially becomes bitter that if you'd had it fresh, it wouldn't have been. And so like stale coffee, old coffee, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's why you can get the beans grounded up in your grinder and then pour it
Okay.
straight in. That's going to be a lot fresher.
All right. So I think honestly, I think our I think our scores are going to be different today because you really like this. And I'm trying to be honest. I'm trying to check myself. All right. Sure. First of all, question. How much does it cost? You should know this. Remember, we're talking about a 10-ounce brick. So we normally charge like 30 ounces. So I'm going to like multiply it by three. But how much is the 10-ounce brick?
It's like, that's not bad. It's like $4, isn't it?
$4? No, it's not $4.
$4.50.
$2.88 at Lidl for a 10-ounce brick. $2.88.
Lidl. Yeah, that's true. It is cheap at Lidl. That's a good point.
So compare that to our 30 ounces, though. That bumps it up to $8.64. So this is probably the priciest one that we've had on a 30-ounce.
Which you drink less of. So could be for those out there who don't like to drink all day coffee. This will probably be your go-to. But those who like to drink all day coffee, sticking around the 5 mark, which we've reviewed before, probably the best bet.
I like to drink all day, but not coffee, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Water.
I'm sure.
Drink water all day.
Hydrate and hydrate. All right, so what's your over? I got mine. What is your final number? Because we have to take the average of it.
Yeah. I have incredibly mixed feelings right now. Because you're right. It packs a more powerful punch, almost like a dark roast or something.
Yes. Yeah.
It does, which I like. It has good flavor, but it's not my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know those foods? You're like, oh, that tastes really good for that food, but I don't love that food.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 5.57.
5.7. I got 6.8.
6.8?
6.8.
6.8? So that's a 1.1 difference, 0.5. So that's a 6.35.
Yes.
6.35?
6.35, yes.
Oh, so this one takes the lead.
6.8. Because for me personally, I love it. Because I can drink a cup. I can drink maybe a second cup, and I'm absolutely just ready for the day. Yeah. And then I might can have a cup in the afternoon, but no more than three cups in a day total. You get your best bang for your buck. Yeah. You don't have to sit there.
I would love this to start off the morning. I would. It gives you a kick. Morning so coffee. I think it's a home run, but you're only going to want just one cup of it.
Right.
After that, I'd be kind of, you know, I'm already, you know, halfway done with this cup, and I'm like, yeah, when I get to the bottom of this, it would make me nauseous to get another cup.
Right.
But it does have super solid flavor, and I'm not convinced I brewed it correctly either. So,
well,
hit or miss.
You know, there's not a proper way.
But that's what makes our coffee reviews accurate, is it's coffee for people that don't know anything about coffee and they want to stay cheap. So inaccurate brewing processes are right up.
Part of it.
Yeah, par for the course.
Yes, sir.
Damn. Okay. Listen, so today we're going to be talking about psychopaths and sociopaths. Before we get into that, Josh came up with a brilliant game for us to kind of get us thinking about crazy people. Maybe that was judgment. I shouldn't say crazy people, mentally disturbed people, people that have an adverse reaction to society. I don't know how you want to describe it. All right. Tell us about your little game here. Because I got notes. I'm ready, son. I'm taking you down.
Yeah, I saw you sent me a picture yesterday of all your notes. So, we're sitting there. I was telling Marty about this game that me and my friends has, a meme that went viral last year. It's like, and they do different things with it. It's like, pick one to defend you. The rest are coming to kill you. Which one are you taking? And so, as we were talking about our topic for the day, Marty suggested that we do that game with top movie killers or, you know, horror movie people in the realm of what we're going to be talking about with sociopaths, psychopaths, and then some of them are just some of our favorites. So we got five people, and you pick one of them to protect you.
I've got a short bio for each one to make sure we're on the same page about what skill set they have. It's like a little Pokemon card. It tells their power.
So give us the list and the description.
Okay.
And so you want to pick the one that you think, if all of them were coming to fight, you had to pick the one that was going to win, because the
now, are you otherwise fighting, you're dead. Are you fighting with them? Like, it's and this person? Or they are fighting for you?
Right. They're fighting for – so you're pretty much picking the winner out of the five.
Okay. Number one, we have Hannibal Lecter, arguably the number one of all time. when it comes to the horror movie realm. All right, here's kind of what I have. He's known for Silence of the Lambs. That's kind of where he came around. He's a forensic psychiatrist, serial killer. He's known for eating his victims, and ultimately, he worked for the FBI to catch other serial killers. Is that how you understand him?
That is exactly how I'm understanding. Okay. He's. I mean, he could be working right beside us. Loves counseling.
Could be me. All right. Second one.
He didn't have a man bun.
Pennywise from It. Mm-hmm. All right. Here's the key points according to Wikipedia. Preys on a victim every 27 years. He shapeshifts, manipulates reality, and he goes unnoticed by adults.
Right. So there's a key factor in this that I'm going to throw in just to help you out. So my brother's a huge It fan.
Okay.
The thing that it, the reason Pennywise and It is so scary, obviously, is because he's a clown, number one. Number two, he feeds off of fear. So that's why he likes to eat children. So because their fears are pure and it makes them taste better. So if
like he literally eats fear.
Yes. And so he shapeshifts and morphs into what you fear.
You know what I fear right now are the creative minds that came up with these characters.
Stephen King.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Number three. Stephen King. Number three is kind of an oddball, but we feel like he embraces the psychological side of this thing. And that is the Joker. The Joker. If you saw the new Joker movie that came out last year, I hear that he embraces this well. When I say the Joker, I think Heath Ledger's Joker, which I thought was phenomenally creepy. Anyway, but here's kind of the characteristics I'm going off of. Sadistic humor, feeds off of chaos. That's how he kind of operates. And he works to upset social order. So, okay. Then number four, Jigsaw from the Saw movies. His nickname is Jigsaw, the guy behind it. All right, he's a civil engineer, and he developed a new love for life after overcoming like a terminal illness kind of a situation. He developed a new love for life, and he uses other people's fear to put them in these like incredibly bad situations in order to provoke love for life in them. He uses just terror and evil gruesomeness to provoke the love of life that he found, right? And he's a civil engineer.
Right.
All right. Last but not least, Freddy Krueger. Nightmare on Elm Street. He kills his victims with razor gloves and only has power in the dream world.
Only has power in the dream world. So if you fall asleep,
that's right.
He can kill you. So that's key. That's key. So a lot of these have key elements.
So if I pick one person but then choose to use meth, I will not have to sleep. Two birds, one stone.
You could probably take out all five with if you did that.
Just meth? Okay.
Yes.
So pick one to defend you. The other four are going to kill you.
Okay.
Listen, I brought this up last night to a couple friends of mine. My wife, my buddy Ryan, and we greatly disagree on this.
Okay. Okay. So let's. So I'm guessing you already got yours.
I know what I had last night, but they caused me to second guess myself because no matter who you pick, like there's weaknesses here.
That's what makes it great. Okay.
I can eliminate some for me. I can a process of reduction. Like I'm not going to pick Freddy Krueger. He only has power in the dream world. That significantly reduces his influence as a whole. And so I feel like I can work around that. He has anyway, I'm not going to pick him. He's not my number one. He's not going to defend me.
Okay. So, man, this is hard. So who are you going with? Who are you going with?
Okay. So I'm gonna double down. Hannibal Lecter. He's my man.
Ooh, okay. Okay. I got Jigsaw.
That's what everybody kept saying last night.
I got Jigsaw. Yes. Okay, he's gonna trap everybody, every single one of these people. He is going to trap and kill all of them. And so the big thing with it is this man don't fear nothing. I mean, you got seven just random kids that grow up to adults to kill it. I mean, come on now. If they can do it, Jigsaw can definitely do it. So I got Jigsaw to take out. He'll probably fall asleep just to mess with Freddy in the dream world. He's definitely taking out the Joker, even though I debated the Joker. Hannibal Lecter's
see, the
up
Joker,
there.
The Joker, though, is not known. The Joker is known for his chaos more than his killing.
But see, that's the thing. He can influence others. His big
but
thing
can,
is influences.
Can he influence someone who's already adverse to social norms?
Probably
like,
not.
Like Hannibal Lecter, Jigsaw, all these guys, they feed on the chaos or the fear or the bad. So, like, I feel like Joker's influence is most readily seen in normal society.
Right. And that's what makes him and Batman great, because both of them are abnormal from society. So,
right. But I'm saying I don't think he would be very influential. He would not have a good fight amongst these guys.
Yeah, that I mean, he probably knows how to get out of stuff. He's crazy, but I don't think he's going to be my guy. So I'm going with Jigsaw, civil engineer, and I think he's got all of them. I think he'll take out every single one of them. Hannibal Lecter, though, I want you to make your case because I'm open to hearing.
Okay,
it.
Here's my thing. I'm not looking for the gruesomeness of what you're capable of. I'm looking for intelligence.
Right.
I'm looking for, which is funny because when we actually start talking about psychopath, sociopath, there's a difference. And one of the key differences between the two is like whether you're born that way or if like society made you that way, right? I want the dude that's born that way. Like okay. I feel like he is psychopath. Like he is not influenced or impacted by the world around him. And he's freaking intelligent. He's a forensic psychiatrist, so he knows crap. And he knows how people work. He knows how society operates, to the point that he gets the FBI to be his ally. Now, I think that happens like post getting caught, but still,
yeah,
he's gutsy.
No, I agree. I think Jigsaw and Hannibal Lecter are the top two.
So here's why I pick him over Jigsaw. Jigsaw is operating on the other side. Society made him this way. He went through a traumatic experience, which reignited his love for life, right? It's an experiential destruction or whatever you want to call it, right? Versus the whole, like he was born like with this just ruthlessness. And so what I see is I believe Hannibal Lecter will be able to put the pieces together from his perspective, his ruthless, accurate psychiatricness, to say this is a person who's operating in this way because of something they've been through, and they're trying to relive out their trauma through other people's experiences, and because there's a rhyme and a reason to the way that Jigsaw operates. And so I think he's going to be able to paint that picture, right? I picture a blank wall that has sticky notes all over it, and you're trying to hone in on it, and he's going to figure out at least the demographic description of Jigsaw, and then we're going to be able to find him.
I think you make a valid point. I think you make a good point for Hannibal in that situation, because he does have the psychiatric background or the psychology background to where he could probably figure out how to beat Jigsaw. But I just feel like Jigsaw, so you have two different spectrums where Hannibal's the psychological, just like genius.
Right.
And then you got Jigsaw, who is literally, he could create any contraption to kill anybody. So,
but here's the thing. He feeds on fear. Like Jigsaw is only going to go after somebody who has an intense fear. By nature, Hannibal Lecter is scared of nothing.
Right.
So would he even, like Jigsaw wouldn't even hone in on Hannibal because he ain't even putting out the hormones of fear that would attract him.
In that situation, yes. But if everybody's trying to kill everybody.
But do they know so who, but they don't know who each other are.
I mean, they could, if they know that there's five of them and they have to kill the other four, then the one person that I'm going to probably stick with is probably going to be Jigsaw. Just because all of them, it's almost like they know they have to kill each other. But now, just in a world like, okay, randomly, who do I think's the scariest? Who do I think is probably the smartest? Who do I think I would fear the most without this just battle royale? Probably Hannibal Lecter. I think you're right on that instance. I do.
I will agree with you on this. On the list that we have compiled, Hannibal Lecter and Jigsaw are top two.
I agree.
For sure. I would have trouble accepting an argument for any of the other three.
Yeah, especially if
because they're so overt. They're so obviously creepy people. I think you could have coffee with Jigsaw and you could have coffee with Hannibal Lecter and walk away never having known what they're capable of.
Which is a perfect example of our topic today.
Unintentional segue moment.
For sociopaths and psychopaths, which
wait a second, before we start, I just need to say we took one name off this list because it was hands down number one by leaps and bounds. Yes. He doesn't necessarily fall into this category, but we were thinking about doing action thrillers, John Wick.
Yeah, we figured if we put John Wick on there, it'd be
that's game down. That's game over. We all know, like, if you're listening and you're like, why didn't they put John Wick on there? We know that he wins. We know. Yeah.
It wouldn't be an argument. It wouldn't be a debate.
You can't put Keanu Reeves on a list. He's going to always win because it's John Wick. You can't put Denzel Washington on a list because he's going to always win because he's Denzel. And you can't put Tom Cruise on a list because he's always going to win.
I'm putting Tom Cruise on that list because he ain't nothing.
Clooney's up in the air. Clooney's sly. All right. Anyway, moving on. Yes, we are talking about psychopaths and sociopaths today.
I'm excited about this topic, oddly, but
I think I've been more excited about a topic yet.
Yeah, because it helps us break out of our series. We did the interview last week with Mr. Jacob Comer, and so now we're hopping into just a fun topic to discuss, but also a very informative topic because people have perceptions of sociopaths and psychopaths. Could be accurate, could not be accurate. And so I'm going to kind of lead in with questions for Mr. Height here today to help break down what a sociopath is, what a psychopath is. And we're just going to kind of conversate about the two. We're going to conversate about, you know, whether they're made, whether they're born. And then if, you know, in the counseling field, has he ever encountered people that could possibly be under that realm. But before we start, I want you to clarify something.
People are obsessed with this.
Yeah,
for sure. True crime podcasts are like one of the hottest podcasts around, in addition to just movies and things of other nature. And so not only are we curious about that, but it seems like as a whole, society has this infatuation with these the minds of evil people.
Right. So what in that, that's kind of what I was going to say. Let's hit on that for a second. What do you feel like draws people to love and be obsessed with serial killers, serial killer documentaries? It's all over Netflix, all over Hulu, all over anything, podcasts. You know, it's like it's always out of the top 10, I think five podcasts are true crime. So what do you feel like is the draw?
You don't know I did this, but I reached out to several people I know, several friends of mine today, this morning, while I was eating breakfast, that I know are like true crime junkies. And I asked them. And then when I was teaching class earlier today, I talked to several of them. And I was like, listen, what attracts you to this idea? I told them what our podcast was about, told them what I was asking. So they knew exactly, you know, kind of what I was getting at. Two people gave me the exact same answer.
Okay.
The third person almost gave me the same answer.
Okay.
All right. So the common factor between all three was basically I cannot fathom doing the things that these people do. So it fascinates me to get inside the mind of the killer, basically, to get inside the mind of somebody who experiences, sees life, is willing to engage in these behaviors. Like, let me just see the world through their eyes because I can't fathom it. The other two, okay, so one of them then works as a domestic violence therapist. And so quite often she feels like she comes into contact with perpetrators who kind of demonstrate some of these qualities. And so just from a purely educational perspective, she feels like it helps her in her practice. And so there's kind of a practical. The other two that I thought was really interesting, shout out to Emily Ford and my cousin Jenna, because they both gave me the same answer. And that was that it makes them feel empowered to not have it happen to them.
Okay. So that's, I also did some research. I didn't ask anybody, but I did some research behind it. And one of the draws that it talked about, and it was like, maybe Psychology Today or something, but one of the draws that they said was just the fact that it brings a weird comfort.
Yeah.
And almost like a deep breath relief when you see it happen, because it's not you, number one, and number two, your life's not that bad. So it gives you a break from the reality of what's going on around you. It breaks the mundane life. It gets you in the mind of somebody else. And it's just like a weird comforting feeling to watch that unfold in front of you and it not be you, which is also why people just gaze at car wrecks or just fascinated with accidents in general, transportation accidents, car wrecks, plane crashes.
What you're saying is if you enjoy the True Crime Podcast, go check out Wreck in a Neighborhood Near You, and you would also enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, people are just fascinated by it. You know, I'm fascinated by it. I'm not going to act like I'm not one of them. You know, well, fascinated by it.
Emily was texting me, and one of the things that she told me that I was like, that's pretty cool, was kind of it's an application point. And kind of in doing that and trying to kind of feel empowered or kind of see how that operates, she said it's actually kind of confirmed that, like, trust your gut. Like, don't feel like you need to be overly polite. Like, don't feel like you always need to, like, I don't know, be there for somebody. If somebody gives you the heebie-jeebies, trust that it's for a reason and take steps accordingly, is basically what she was saying, which I'm like, you know, that's true. You know, oftentimes I don't think about that. Like, I'm a big guy. I don't often think, hey, could this person take advantage of me, attack me, kidnap me, right? And so even if I kind of feel something funny about somebody, I normally don't feel scared that I can't get away from the situation. Like, right, rarely does that happen. But I also understand, like, I'm an anomaly. There's not many 6'4", 290-pound guys walking around.
Right, yeah.
And so, like, I can maybe to a fault trust that, where she's like, no, like, I got to watch myself. I don't want something bad to happen to me. So it's kind it's of encouraged like me to trust my gut.
Yeah, it's almost like prep. Like,
yeah,
what would I do different in this situation that this person did not do different? Because
the crazy thing is, I read a statistic this morning that said up to 4% of the population deals with these psychopathic, sociopathic urges, which doesn't sound like a lot. But when you translate that to a number, you're talking about millions of people.
Mm-hmm. And that was another thing, is my question was, not everybody, but do some people watch it and think, like, I could probably see myself doing something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, mm-hmm. what, you know, I'm not going to go too spiritual with it, but, like, it also could be just a relation to, man, we're just broken people in general. Like, I mean, we have this, like, perception of the world in our minds of how things are supposed to be, instead of how they actually are.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings out the light of how things actually are. I mean, that's not everybody who walks around is going to kill people, but
yeah,
this is not a perfect world.
There's a lot of people capable of far more than you realize.
Exactly. And, you know, we're broken. We live in a world that's sometimes it needs, I mean, that's from the beginning of time. And, you know, people say it get worse, but maybe it's just not as publicized a little bit. Maybe we've always been this way.
Here's something crazy. I was going to save this for later in the show, but I had this guy come to me last year for counseling. He's like, I just don't feel right. He said, I feel like there's something wrong with me. And like, I really liked this guy. He was really nice. And I'm like, man, he's just like, he's just trying to find a problem for himself. Like, I don't know what his deal is, but, like, I think he's okay. Anyway, while I was preparing for this podcast, I had this light bulb go off. What he was doing was telling me, basically, I see these characteristics in myself. Don't know why they're there. I don't necessarily like the fact that they're there, even though I don't really care very much at the same time. And I wonder if there's something I could do to change that about myself. It was weird because, like, one of the cornerstone characteristics in people that are kind of this antisocial, you know, in that bracket, they don't have any empathy. Like, they don't care about people. So right. It was weird to me because in the same tone, he was almost saying, I don't care about people and I don't care if I hurt people. But I know I recognize it, and it doesn't make him feel any different because he doesn't care. But he realizes, he should.
Right. Okay.
And on some level, it almost bothered him that he didn't, which was really weird. Like, I didn't know how to make sense of it. And now I'm sitting here like, was this Joker, like, you know,
no pun intended,
like sitting there like, you know, hey, I wonder if I could take this guy out.
All right. Well, okay. So let's help bring some clarity with what that looks like. So for everybody out there, and now correct me if I'm wrong, but psychopath and sociopath are not necessarily actual clinical diagnosis, but they fall under the umbrella of antisocial personality disorder.
That is, we're walking in murky waters, but yes.
Okay.
Right. So I spent a couple of hours probably doing some research on this because I was very intrigued by it. It does interest me, kind of getting the minds of people that I don't feel like I'm like, just kind of seeing the world like they do. So in doing that, what I've realized is even in the highest levels of education, academia, science, there's disagreement on this. Okay.
Right.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you if there is the most popular breakdown as much as I could find. Okay. So I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out there. So yes. So like in the world of mental health, in the world of counseling, psychiatry, the whole deal, the term sociopath and psychopath are kind of sub categories. They're kind of sub conceptualizations of antisocial personality disorder. Antisocial personality disorder is a diagnosis, which is up there with borderline personality and histrionic personality disorder and narcissism, right? Mm-hmm. They have some similarities about themselves, some core features that match each other, but their presentation is very different. But it's kind of in that cluster of personality disorders of which. So anyway, so antisocial is the clinical term, but in society, we normally refer to people as psychopaths or sociopaths. Even as a counselor, I tend to use that term more. Like if I'm talking about a case, I may say, man, I felt this guy just had some like psychopathic tendencies. And so I think that's the more common lingo, even though the proper term is antisocial. But what I did is, so I took in kind of researching this, I tried to boil it down to something we could understand. Because you can look up the diagnosis and you can look down like all the mumbo jumbo, but there's four main qualities that are present in both.
And both. Okay.
Because some would argue that they're synonyms, that they're two sides of the same coin, the psychopath and sociopath. But I found this really like pithy, precise definition that I liked. And so when you're looking at either a psychopath or a sociopath, you got these four qualities. First is a disregard for laws and social mores, which is the root for morals, right? So it's a complete disregard for social structure, law and order. The second is a total disregard for the rights of other people, which those kind of go hand in hand. Like you don't respect the rights of the people, but you also don't respect the rights of the society that we operate in. So it's a complete disregard for rights. And then number three, it's a failure to feel remorse or guilt. Another way we say it is they have no empathy. They have absolutely no ability or a very limited ability to care about other people and the impact they have on other people. So not only are you breaking all of the expectations for the culture you live in and the people you interact with, you don't care. Number four, and the last one, is you have a tendency to be violent or aggressive.
Gotcha. And so the violent and aggressive, is that where the two split off is how they display that behavior.
Okay, you're getting deeper than my running knowledge here. I would say this. So antisocial personality disorder. Oh, wait, you're talking about psychopath and sociopath. That's never mind. Sorry. No, that is not the difference. The difference is not in those four characteristics. Those four characteristics tend to be true in both psychopaths and sociopaths. The real question that differentiates the two is, how did I get here?
Okay, so it's not the display of, because I was reading something that said a psychopath is more likely to be intellectual like Hannibal Lecter, and a sociopath is more supposed to be like aggressive and sporadic.
So no, you're accurate, but the thing is, both of those are displays of violence.
Right.
It's just in different ways.
That's not the main difference. So what is the main difference?
Okay. So this is really interesting to me. I love studying this. So your brain operates in, there's two sides to your brain, right? This isn't rocket science. There's the way we think and the way we feel. Thinking, feeling, right? And so a psychopath with a P, psychopath, it is said to say they were born this way. It is genetically how they operate, right? And so it's characterized by that Hannibal Lecter attitude of, it's not an emotional response. It's not a feeling. It's pure intellect. It's the way they think. They conceptualize. And I'll dive into that in a minute. On the flip side of that is the sociopath. And I try to remember that as in sociopath, social, society has made them this way. That's how I try to like create a word connection to help me remember. And so typically this is probably somebody that wasn't born this way. They may have had some tendencies, but they weren't born this way. But they probably had a heck of a childhood.
Joker. New movie, The Joker, is a perfect description.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it's somebody who's probably had some intense trauma, experiences of violence, and just think worst of the worst as far as what your childhood could look like. Abuse, neglect, you name it. And so in going through that, it's almost like it seared their conscience. It seared their ability to interact in a healthy manner with society. And from that, they started developing this complete disregard for the rights of others in society, not caring about that, and then becoming emotionally violent. All right, so you track it with me so far?
I'm here with it.
Okay. Yeah. So one's born that way, and they tend to operate more intellectually. If society has basically burnt you, then it can be cultivated. Here's something that I think was kind of interesting. In some preliminary studies, they actually found that with a psychopath that was born with these antisocial traits, that there was almost a genetic defect that showed that their limbic system, their amygdala in particularly, which regulates impulse control and emotions, was at a deficit. And they think that may contribute to why they genetically have these characteristics, because they do not process and register emotions in the same way as a normal human brain would.
Okay. And so with sociopaths, since it's a part of more of made that way with society and the trauma, the trauma or whatever happens to make them this way kind of forces that same type of lack of impulse or lack of control with the transformation of the brain during the trauma. Is that kind of how it?
I guess. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know all the details,
right?
As to how it happens, but what I do know is, like, you ever had somebody that like just took advantage of you and took advantage of you and took it. And then you got to the point that, you know what? I don't even care about me being mean to you at this point. I'm tired of you taking advantage of me. No, go on your merry way and leave me alone. And even if that person approached you in the future, you got nothing for them, right? Like, you've almost lost your ability to care about them as a person because they've taken advantage of you too much. Like, I almost get like, take that, multiply it by a million. You take a person who feels like they were just ruined, right? Like, their life was horrible. And so what happens is they almost develop this extremely intense aversion to people, to society. And then they generalize it to all of society because of the severity of what they went through, that they almost just cut off. I would say it's probably self-preserving. In that it allows them to keep functioning, because when they could feel, all they felt was pain. And so by allowing themselves to stop feeling, it allows them to not be in misery. And they switch to a place of being vulnerable to actually a place of empowerment. Because when I get angry, it gives me a sense of control, as opposed to sadness. Sadness is not a pleasant feeling. Angry, even though anger can be an unhealthy feeling, it can feel good. Like, it's empowering. So I almost feel like these are people that are taking advantage of so much, they've experienced so much pain that they almost flip to the complete other end of, I will feel no pain and I will be the one that actually creates the pain, because it gives me power. On a very small level, you kind of see that in bullying a lot of times.
Right.
You take somebody that may be being abused, neglected, or mistreated at home, and then they actually carry out those same behaviors at school or in the workplace because it gives them a sense of empowerment, as opposed to the pain that they felt from being on the other end of it.
Exactly.
If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
But I want to touch on really quick what you said, and that is the emotional reactivity piece. All right, real quick, because it's an easy answer. With psychopaths, it's not about your emotions. It's not about the person that's in front of you. It's not about how you're interacting with them. It's just, this is just a calculated decision I'm making. You know, there's no rhyme or reason to it, right? It's not how you treated me. This is just how I am. So that's why we say it's an intellectual piece. They're just making decisions, which actually makes them scarier. Like, that makes them
really scary.
Far more at risk, because when you're sitting across from them, you're not going to get a reaction. They're calm, cool, and calculated.
Yeah.
Right? They're chill. On the flip side of that, when you're talking about somebody who is a seared conscious because of the trauma that they've been through, right? So what we know is, if you've been through trauma, if you've been through something difficult, in the world of counseling, we say there's triggers, right? So you end up having a sensitivity to certain experiences based on that trauma. And when that sensitivity is touched, it provokes a disproportional emotional reaction.
Right.
Okay. So the way I describe it is, if I'm going through life and somebody walks up and touches my arm, I might say, "Hey, why are you touching my arm? I don't really want you to grab my arm." But the reaction is probably in proportion to the level of aggression that person has shown. Okay. That being said, 6 weeks ago, my arm got broken. Walking around, it may not be obvious that my arm is broken. It still looks normal on the outside. Somebody walks up, grabs that arm. I clock them. Right? And they'd say, "Bro, why'd you do that? That was a disproportionate emotional and physical response to me grabbing your arm to let you know lunch is ready." What they don't know is, under the surface is a broken bone. And that, compared to the level of pain that I felt, my reaction was on point.
Right, to you.
Right? So that's the same thing with trauma. When we have unhealed trauma in our life, there are wounds. And unbeknownst to the world around us, and even sometimes unbeknownst to us, that wound gets touched, and it creates a disproportionate pain that creates a disproportionate response. Right? Unhealed pain. So anyway, all that being said, a sociopath is just a walking trigger. Like society is their trigger. And so they're incredibly emotionally responsive. And so they're much more predictable, because typically their violence is going to be demonstrated to people that trigger them, whether it's people that fit into a box that reminds them of something, or people that just rub them the wrong way. Right. And so if you get them in a police station, if you get them on the street, they're going to be much more volatile, and it's going to be obvious that they have evil and criminal intent or reactions, because they're very reactive to the stimulus on the outside of them. Where a psychopath, it has nothing to do with your environment or the stimulus. It's purely calculated.
Gotcha. So like a sociopath, and this goes back to, I was thinking about Mindhunter, if anybody's seen Mindhunter on Netflix, is how the behavioral analysis unit got started at the FBI, and he interviewed serial killers. And one of the things he discovered was, there was a guy named Ed Kemper, who's a serial killer. And he always, like every single one of them, would kill people that reminded them of the person that hurt them. So like, his mom was extremely abusive, extremely traumatic to him. Really just talked down to him nonstop, but he never had the courage to kill her. So he killed women that looked like her. And then finally one day he had the courage to kill her. And, you know, it just kind of continued and continued. And it was a very interesting concept because it goes hand in hand with what you were saying. It's like, that's his trigger. His trigger is the fact that his mom treated him like that through his life. And now if he sees somebody, to get out some of that aggression that he's had pent up against her, he takes it out on somebody else.
Yeah. And unfortunately, like, what starts out of our like initial motive can like turn into other motives, right? Like, he may just start out saying, oh, brunette women remind me of my mom, I'm gonna kill them. But then in killing people, like, other motives may create, so that even if that motive disappeared, like, he would keep going back for more, whether it be for power, sex, money, fame, whatever. Like, there could be other motives that, like, you know, continue the
tag along with that. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. And not everybody, I don't want anybody to worry, like, oh my god, I'm walking around looking, I wonder if I look like his mom. But just, you know, it's rare, but it happens. And a lot of times, even like Marty was saying at the beginning, you might have somebody that even has possibly some of these tendencies, but knows well beyond to use it like it right. for a bad thing. They just know, like, okay, this is just how I am. And they just go along with life, and then nothing happens to it.
Yeah. This is what I tell my class that I teach. When you start looking at diagnoses, everybody knows somebody that they think has it.
Right.
You know, that's just what we do. We try to put a face with the name. And so the reality is, especially with personality disorders, they've conceptualized personality disorders. There's like 9, 10 different ones out there, because it best represents the different personalities that exist in society when taken to an unhealthy extreme. When they've crossed over the threshold of normal to pathological to destructive, you know. And so the reality is we all have personalities. All of us, every person has a personality. And my guess is every person that walks on this earth, if you looked at that list of personality disorders, all of us bend towards one of them.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and so we got to be aware, like, yeah, we can see people in all of them because they represent humanity, right? But only a handful of people, not many, actually, their personalities are so extreme that it crosses over that line and becomes dangerous or right. problematic, or, you know, hinders their ability to function in society.
Exactly. So, all right. So before we wrap up, I want to ask you,
tell me,
besides that one person that you mentioned,
yeah,
have you ever encountered in therapy? Obviously, we're not going to give names. We're not going to give anything like that. But have you ever encountered anybody in therapy where you thought that you either gave the diagnosis of antisocial or you could have possible tendencies that they kind of might have some of those?
I have.
What were some of that experience?
Yeah.
For you.
So I'm immediately thinking of three people right now. The one that I mentioned that came in and basically admitted to all of the criteria that you would see under antisocial personality disorder. He says, I see these within myself. I don't know that I like that because I don't know they're healthy. And we just kind of talked about it. Generally speaking, I don't view him as a high risk to society. I would more see him as one of those like petty criminals that just can't stop stealing crap. That's gotcha. Kind of how he operates. Some drug use there. But anyway, there's him. Immediately after that, I think of a man that I met one time who had been released from prison. And in meeting with him, it became abundantly clear that he didn't give a rip about the law. He's going to do whatever he wanted to do, had a long history of domestic violence, had really no interest in conforming to the expectations of society, did not want a job. You know, he wanted to be on disability for a mental illness so he could do whatever he wanted to do. That's what it boiled down to. I actually dismissed him. He had some drug and alcohol use. I actually dismissed him from services because treating antisocial personality disorder didn't fall under one of the areas that we were treating at that time. And so I referred him out. Long story short, he got arrested a short time later for domestic violence and further crimes. But the one guy that I want to highlight is a man that I worked with. This man was, he was middle of the road. I don't know, 40s or something. Earlier in my career, in the middle of the state, I worked with this guy. We lived with family, lived with his grandparents or something. But anyway, hands down, in my life, it is the creepiest and most uncomfortable person I have ever had the privilege of sitting with.
Why?
In my core, I knew that something bad was going to happen. That before I don't know before what, like, but I knew that at some point I was going to find out that somebody died. It was just a question of, was it going to be him or was it going to be other people?
Mm.
And so the way that it worked, and I have to avoid a lot of context here, because you could easily Google the details and information on this individual would readily pop up because of some of the things that he did. But he engaged in completely inappropriate sexual behavior, completely inappropriate societal behavior, drug use, a lot of stuff. But here's where I'm confused with him is I actually had to hospitalize him at one point. They gave him a diagnosis of antisocial personality disorder, but his issues actually went beyond that. I suspect that he may have also had what's called paranoid personality disorder because he was so consumed. He was so convinced that like society was evil, was this awful evil that he was delusional. He was paranoid. I get the suspicion though, that he had an intense amount of trauma in his life. This man was so poor that like, he looked like skin and bones, like Skeletor. I actually would give him food at times if we had food in the office, cause I knew he was starving. And if there's one thing I know is I can't connect with you and help you if your basic needs aren't being met. And so I would try to kind of extend the olive branch in that way. There are some people that donated some moon pies at one point. I'd given him one, hoping to again build that relationship so I could speak truth into his life. And I could just tell this man was starved, right? So he had an intense amount of neglect and trauma from his childhood. And so I suspect that he leans towards the sociopath side of life because he was an incredibly seared man. Society, for whatever reason, something had hurt him deeply, and he was reactive to society. And so that's why I was fearful, is he had convinced himself that there was a target on his back and people were out to get him. And it provoked such a deep and relentless rage within him that he was creating violent interactions despite the fact that they were unnecessary. He was provoking them, convinced that the other people were provoking them. He constantly both wanted to die, but also didn't want to hurt anybody. But then at times he was homicidal. So if you're a therapist, you know, that's a fine line, right? Like I have ethical responsibilities to protect people from themselves and society from people. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I was very honest with him about that, what that line was. And there was times he got very close to that line, but then we were able to come off of that line some. There was one time I had to hospitalize him. That's pretty much when our relationship ended, because when I hospitalized him, despite the fact that he broke our contract, he did what I told him he couldn't do. He held me accountable for that. He said, "You did me wrong," and trust was lost. Even though the reality is all I did was honor the contract we had both walked into. But he held that accountable. So he quit coming to see me. But I'll never forget, there was this one point, because what would happen is he would start ranting. He would start raging about these issues. And I would let him talk, but the longer he talked, the more he disconnected from reality. I could see it. It was like his eyes just sucked into another portal. And there was this one day so he carried a box cutter on him because he was working at this factory at the time, that he was lost in one of these like portal rants where he was disconnected. And I could tell he was disconnected. And he just started talking about how he wished someone would kill him so his torment could end. And he stood up in my office, pulled out his box cutter. He laid his arm on my desk, put the box cutter in my face and started screaming, "Kill me! Kill me now! Do me a favor and just kill me!" And he started screaming it. And I realized that this man was not talking to me. I don't know who he was talking to, but he was not, I mean, he was not looking at me. He was disconnected. And so I said his name really loud. I said, "Hey," I said, "sit down." And when I did that, it's like it shocked him back. He immediately like looked at me and like registered where he was at, what was happening. And I could see the energy just kind of, he just go out of his body and he slumped back down in the chair. And he said, "I'm sorry, like, sorry about that." And he calmed down, but I could tell he was disconnected. Like something wasn't right. It was the strangest experience. Again, I don't know that that's true for psychopaths and sociopaths, but it was just one of the most uncomfortable situations. They don't prepare you for that, right? They talk about extreme situations. They talk about, you know, violence breaks out, how to handle it. But it was one of the most bizarre. I mean, I would not be surprised if I go to my retirement never having experienced a person like I experienced that day. Long story short, though, it's really sad, is shortly after I quit seeing him, some things happened. And I called and actually called somebody in the legal system that for a totally unrelated reason. And they said, "Oh, are you calling me because of so-and-so?" And I said, "No, you know, I'm not working with them anymore." He said, "Oh, I thought you were calling because he killed himself yesterday." And here's the weirdest thing. Like, I actually feel kind of uncomfortable admitting this, but I both felt a wave of sadness and relief at the same time, because on some level I hope and I pray that his torment is over.
Right.
At the same time, well, I'm incredibly sad that I couldn't break through, right? Like every time I work with somebody, I hope I'm going to be a difference maker. I'm going to be the person this person can look back on and say, he cared about me. He loved me. He was there for me. And I was able to come out of this funk, you know? So it sucks that that was not true for this guy. But the relief comes in. I always knew that there was going to be violence in the end. And I guess the relief was, he didn't kill anybody else in the process.
Right. But could have. The ability to.
Could have. Like he would tell me these stories, these fantasies he had, and they all involved people dying. Mm. And so I was terrified that that he was going to end up in a shootout with cops, basically, or something of that nature, you know, or some of the family that he resented, that he was going to kill them and then kill himself. And so when I found out that he had killed himself, but that nobody else died in the process, you know, I prayed that his soul was at peace, but I was also relieved that nobody died, because I knew that he was, hands down, he was a risk to society without any question in my mind.
Yeah. Welcome to therapy.
That's right.
Wow.
Welcome for all you like budding therapists out there, that's not a normal experience. That was kind of once in a lifetime experience for me.
But that was early on in your career though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I was fresh. Listen, man, I was green. I was fresh.
I was about to say, you really took the front on that. But you stuck with it. So, I mean,
it's one of those times when like I was too dumb to know what I didn't know. And so I probably just kept plodding along, not realizing what I was getting myself into.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing the experiences. This has been a very, very fun episode in a way, but also a very sobering episode to know that these things are real. They are out there in society as far as like mental illnesses. Like, this is not just something on Netflix or Hulu.
Right.
Like, you can experience this in everyday life.
This is life, man.
Yeah.
So, man, I enjoyed it. Glad to be here. We got to wrap up. Listen, as always, guys, we encourage you to send your feedback, ideas, reach out to us. The number 23 on sweet wheat, like wheat bread, large 23 on sweet wheat at yahoo.com. All right, guys.
You said the email. I'm proud of you.
Y'all behave yourselves.
Peace out.